Love a little Led Zeppelin on a Sunday morning. Another solid choice. Chris does a good job. He mixes up the new stuff with the old stuff, and I like that. Can't get tracked into too much of one thing, too much one genre. Maybe the only genre we haven't played on the show is... But the only genre we've never played on the show is probably country. I like country music, but I know Chris doesn't, so that's all right. I'm kind of excited for George Strait coming to Kansas City. I don't know how much tickets are. Probably can't afford those unless somebody at Sprint Center wants to throw me a couple, but I'm sure everybody who works at Sprint Center probably gets a call when every concert comes to town. Hey, you got a couple of extras? So I wouldn't do that. Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. The clouds are breaking up. The sun is coming out. Haven't seen that in a while, so should be a nice day if you got to get some stuff done. If you're out and about driving around. My name is Brad Porter. You can follow me on Twitter, at Brad K. Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. You can follow him at Chris_Bohlig, two L's, one G. Had a good start to the show so far. We had Matt Verderam from fansided.com come on and talk Chiefs football in the National Football League. We had Howard Richmond from the Golf Course Superintendents Association, which is based here in Kansas City. Used to write for the Kansas City Star. We talked PGA Championship. He spent time at Bethpage Black this past week. So he gave us some good insight on the course. If you missed any of those guests, you can get the podcast at 810WHB.com. And now we bring in Michael Exisa from CBSSports.com. First time on the show, Michael. I appreciate your time.
Sure. Happy to come on.
Good. How are you? Where are you based out of?
I'm based in New York.
Based in New York. Okay. I was talking about the sun earlier because we just haven't seen it in about a week here in Kansas City. It's been nothing but rain for a while. So hopefully it's nice out there. Well, I was going through, Chris had found your story on Hunter Dozier, which was written about 4 or 5 days ago from the Kansas City Royals. Hunter Dozier, third baseman, first baseman, DH, a little bit of everything, and kind of the rebound, I guess it's not a rebound of his career, but a step forward in his career so far this season. And you've got some really interesting numbers on Hunter Dozier, and I'll just throw out a couple, and you kind of tell me what they mean. So we're talking about Hunter Dozier. His exit velocity ranks, it's 89.5 miles an hour, which is in the 66th percentile of Major League Baseball. The hard hit rate, which is another stat that's becoming more and more used, 40.2%, which ranks in the 65th percentile. So for you, when you see those numbers, what's that telling you about Hunter Dozier?
Well, it's very straightforward. That just means he's hitting the ball really hard. And those numbers they've actually come down a little bit since I wrote the article, but they're still really good. When I wrote it, I mean, he was like in the top like 10% of the league. And I think that was a little bit unsustainable, but it was a good sign because he had never hit the ball that hard earlier in his career. You know, he had a fair amount of playing time last year, played a little bit in, I think it was 2016. He never hit the ball like that. This year he's really hitting the ball hard. Even with a slight setback the last few days, it's still among the best in the league. And I mean, that's like, it's a very basic aspect of hitting. The harder you hit the ball, the more success you're going to have, and it certainly shows up with Dozier.
And you were looking for kind of some reasons for it. I know you quoted, I believe, Sam Melliker from the Kansas City Star.
Yeah.
And Dozier really didn't have a solid answer for you. But when you drill down into it further, which you did, one of the things that Hunter Dozier is really excelling at this year is contacting the ball inside the strike zone. Last year it was about a little over 88%. This year it's almost 95%. So balls in the strike zone, he is absolutely jumping on this year.
Yeah, and that's two things I always kind of look at is how much is a player chasing out of the strike zone, how much is he making contact on pitches in the strike zone, and Dozier has been outstanding at both this season. So he is not swinging at bad pitches, and when he does swing at hittable pitches, he's not missing them. His contact rates are like, they're like Mookie Betts level. They're great. And you combine that level of contact with how hard he's hitting the balls, I don't think this success he's had this season, it's not a fluke. This is what he's done to get there. It's sustainable. Now, is he really like a true talent 1,000 OPS guy? Probably not, but there's signs here that this is a legitimately improved hitter. He's not the same player he was even just last year. Just because he's so much more disciplined at the plate, he's not missing the pitches he should miss, or the pitches he shouldn't miss, and he's hitting the ball hard. It's a great combination for him. Also, he's a pretty good defensive player. He's sneaky fast for his size. He's a big guy, but he could run really well. So when the Royals kind of drafted him all those years ago, they took him 8th overall. people kind of looked at it as maybe they reached a little bit because they wanted to spend the money on Sean Manaea later. But he looks like a player who belongs at the top of the draft. He wasn't, you know, this is a legitimate first-round player, and he looks the part now. He's took him some time. You know, development is not always linear. Sometimes it takes guys a while. And it looks like he's finally figured it out. And the Royals have a player who, as they're kind of building up their next, you know, contending team, he looks like he could be part of that now, whereas a year ago it was a little up in the air.
Hey, we're speaking with Michael Exisa from CBSSports.com, and you mentioned Hunter Dozier's defense at third base, and I'll tell you, Michael, if you watch the Royals every day, when he was injured over the last couple of weeks and was forced to play DH and a little first base, it showed, because his replacement guys, primarily Gutierrez at third base, really struggled at times.
Yeah, and that's kind of the other part of Dozier's game that I didn't really touch on because he's having such a great year offensively. But he contributes in defense. He runs really well, too. He's a big guy. I think he's like 6'4", 220, something like that.
No, he's a monster.
Runs really well. So he's not just like some kind of like lumbering masher who's going to spend his rest of his career as a first baseman DH. He can legitimately play third base, and third base is a hard position to fill. Right now there's a lot of great third basemen in baseball, but it's still historically a really hard position to fill. So they have somebody now in the Royals. Going forward, you could plan around him at third base. You're not, you know, hoping he kind of will maybe figure it out at some point. It looks like he's figured it out. This is somebody you could build around with Mondesi and Nicky Lopez, and guys like that look like they could be the core of the next good Royals team.
Well, I'll tell you, Michael, there's a funny quote from Ned Yost from several years ago about third baseman and how hard it is to find the right one. When Mike Moustakas first came up in his first season or two, he was really struggling. It was not pretty. And a reporter asked him, you know, have you thought about sending him down? Do you have somebody else? And he goes, look, I can't just go over to the third baseman tree and pick one off. This is who we got.
Yeah.
We're speaking
and
with...
Even Alex Gordon, as good as he is, as athletic as he is, he couldn't handle third base either, and he had to move to the outfield. So when you find somebody who could play that position, I mean, that's a big problem you solve there going forward. You don't have to worry about this position where with guys hitting the ball so hard today, the reactions have to be so quick. You get a guy like Dozier there, you're set.
We're speaking with Michael Exisa. CBSSports.com has a good story up right now about Hunter Dozier, Royals third baseman, and his improvement at the plate. I cited the exit velocity and the hard hit rate. Another area that you kind of went into in your piece is the chase rate, swinging at balls outside the strike zone. And Hunter Dozier last year was swinging at 34.5% of pitches outside the strike zone. This year, he's cut it down to just under 24%. So that's almost an 11% improvement. And I guess maybe some of that just has to do with you got almost a full season in last year. You're more disciplined. Mm-hmm. You're more selective. But he's swinging at a lot fewer pitches outside the strike zone right now.
Yeah, and this is significant improvement. He's gone from a slightly worse than average chase rate. You know, it wasn't horrible, but it was a little bit worse than average. This year, we're talking like Joey Votto levels, where he just doesn't swing at anything that's not a strike. Maybe I don't think this rate is going to last forever because, I mean, it starts with the pitching these days. Pitchers are just so good, and their stuff is so nasty that it's hard to kind of stay within the strike zone the whole time. But there's been so much improvement here that I don't think it's a fluke. You know, if it was maybe 4 or 5 percentage points better, that's kind of something that wouldn't really catch my eye. But with this gigantic 11, 12 percentage point improvement, that's significant. And he spoke about it. I just chatted with him the other day when he was here in New York with the Royals. He didn't really have an answer for it. He just kind of said, you know, I've just been, you know, making a concerted effort to swing at better pitches. And then, you know, okay, that sounds easy enough, but it's not. It's obviously not that easy because the pitching today is just so good.
Well, sometimes players just don't have an answer. They just, I guess it's experience and time and doing it over and over again. And sometimes there's not a perfect answer to it.
Yeah, and a lot of times it's, you know, we go in and we talk to him about it and we're hoping for that kind of like that little nugget of advice from a coach or whatever. But a lot of times it just comes down to experience and a player just getting a better understanding of who he is as a player, as a hitter. And it just kind of all comes together and there's not that like one magic reason. It's just a whole bunch of stuff coming together.
We're speaking with Michael Exisa from CBSSports.com, talking about Hunter Dozier, Royals third baseman. So these numbers might not be sustainable, but up until, You know, about 3 weeks ago, when most of the sports writers were putting out their, you know, here's my early season MVP top five list, Hunter Dozier was on a lot of those lists. I don't think that'll happen at the end of the season, but early on, he's been having an MVP-type season.
Yeah, and I mean, the Royals are going to need an all-star this year, and he's as good as a bet as anyone right now, obviously. And you know, MVP and stuff like that, MVP is, there's a narrative element to it where voters, they still like to see players on contenders. The Royals are, I mean, I think they're in last place right now. They're,
they're
not really going to make much noise in the race. So.
Nope.
MVP is not going to happen.
No.
Right, maybe he'll get a vote or two, but the important thing is that the Royals, where they are right now, they're just looking for as many building blocks as possible. And Hunter Dozier coming into the season, I wasn't sure if he was that, if he was that kind of player. It was worthwhile to give him a chance this year to see if he could be that guy. And now he looks like it. And that's, you know, if it's going to take so much work to get the Royals back to contention, to get any rebuilding team back to contention. And you just kind of check the boxes. You know, we need a third baseman, we need a shortstop, we need some pitching, and Dozier at third base is just another thing you could kind of check off and move forward and work on the rest of the team.
So when you look at the Royals, you got to see them in New York. You mentioned Hunter Dozier. We mentioned Alberto Mondesi, Whit Merrifield, and Nicky Lopez. And Chris and I were talking yesterday about kind of a timeline for contending, at least for a wild card spot. I put it at no earlier than 2021, but I'm more thinking 2022 or 2023. From far away, when you see the Royals, do you think what do you think of a timeline for getting back in contention?
Yeah, I think 2021 is a good estimate, and I think when you have a really good base of young talent, they could arrive sooner than you expect. And you know, I think my go-to example was the Cubs. And in 2016, Theo Epstein is on the record saying, I thought 2017 was going to be our year. Then it came together ahead of schedule in 2016. It happened with the Braves last year. It happened with the Pirates a few years ago. When you have that talent base, it could come together quick. I still think the Royals, I mean, they have a good, with Dozier, Mondesi, Merrifield, Nicky Lopez, those guys you could build around. Salvador Perez, even though he's out for the year, you could build around those guys. It's just a question of figuring out the pitching, and they had a really pitching heavy draft last year with some college guys who could come quickly. I think 2021 is the year, that's the year you kind of want to see like legitimate improvement. Like we should be, at the very least, we should be playing games against contending teams and not looking overmatched. If that's not happening by then, something kind of went wrong along the lines. So I think 2 years, 3 years, that's a reasonable expectation for this group.
Yeah, I think Royals fans would be happy if we kind of went the Minnesota Twins route and kind of jumped the quote-unquote schedule on when you're supposed to be competitive, because I didn't think the Twins would be ready until next year, but man, they're playing some terrific baseball right now.
Yeah, I had them kind of earmarked as my, I don't want to say surprise team, but I thought they were the team that could be better than everyone expected, and part of that is the Indians, I thought, they took a step back in the offseason. They left themselves so little margin for error, and now Kluber's hurt, Clevenger's hurt, they've kind of exhausted that little margin they had. The Twins, they just had a great young position player core, and everybody's kind of figuring it out at once. And like I said, you know, I thought the Twins, like you said, you know, the Twins would look like next year would be their year. Well, when you have that good young core of players, it could happen quickly, and that's what's happened there. And the Royals, that's what you kind of hope what happens with them, that they arrive ahead of schedule.
All right, speaking with Michael Exisa from CBSSports.com, we're talking a little Hunter Dozier and the Royals. I'll kind of wrap it or wind it down with this, since you're in New York. What is the beef with the Rays and the Yankees right now? Because I think it's turning into not only a good rivalry, but it's getting heated. They've thrown some words and stepped out of the dugout. What's going on between these two teams?
You know, it seems it started last September. There was a series, I think it was the second to last series of the year last year, and the Yankees were blowing the Rays out. It was like 10-0 in the fifth inning, and some September call-up reliever for the Rays threw at Austin Romine, Yankees backup catcher, threw behind his head. The Yankees didn't like that, obviously. CeCe Sabathia hit somebody on the Rays in retaliation, got ejected, and it kind of carried over this year. There was a game in Tampa, I guess it was last week, it just happened, and Yankees, somebody hit a home run. The next guy, the reliever, threw up and in on him, and watching it live, I didn't think it was intentional. I thought it was just a pitch that got away, but the Yankees weren't happy about it. The optics didn't look good, and Sabathia happened to be pitching that game, and he didn't throw at anyone, but you could tell there was some anger there. And I don't know, it's a very weird thing, because these are two very good teams.
Yep.
Yankees, even with all their guys hurt, they're still really good, and they're going to be fighting for this division all year. And And it hasn't really kind of escalated into a full-blown, like, beanball war, benches clearing yet. But you can tell there's a little bit of animosity on both sides here. They don't like each other. And it's as long as, like, nobody gets hurt and does something ridiculous, like
right.
somebody in the head. It's good entertainment as long as there's no intent to injure anywhere. And you know, they're going to finish their series today. They still have another, like, 13 games to play this year. So it's going to keep going.
All right, final couple of things for you here. Since we're kind of ruling Hunter Dozier out of the MVP race simply because the Royals aren't contending and somebody else is going to have better numbers probably anyway, what's your kind of early picks for American League and National League MVP and a World Series champion? If you had to pick on March 19th, how it's going to end?
I think for National League, the MVP has to be Cody Bellinger. He's been out of this world. As good as Yelich has been, Bellinger has been even better. Dodgers are in first place. That's going to help. So the American League, I think the Astros are the best team. So I think Springer and Bregman, you know, Springer has been unbelievable
right.
this month. I think those two guys have to be kind of the front runners in MVP. And, you know, coming into the season, I think the Astros are the Dodgers in the World Series. And I'm feeling pretty good about that right now, the
yes.
way they're playing. And I think the Astros are, even after losing Keuchel, I still think they're the best, most well-rounded team in baseball. So I'm going to pick them to win the World Series until they give me a reason to think they're not the best team in the league.
Yeah, they've won 10 or 11 in a row, and I wonder if they would think about adding Dallas Keuchel at some point and just steamroll everybody.
I wouldn't rule it out because the draft is in 2 weeks, and once that passes, the free agent compensation stuff goes away. So,
right.
I mean, if Keuchel and Kimbrel, they should sign, so
right.
the rest I would hope. I mean, every team is going to need pitching as good as the Astros are. It would be kind of interesting to see after all this time just waiting, deciding not to re-sign him, and then they jump back in, you know. We'll see how it goes, but it's something that I wouldn't rule out completely.
Hey, Michael, I appreciate you coming on the show. First time we've had you on the show, and I have to give you a compliment, not only on the Hunter Dozier story, but just the amount of content that not only you churn out covering baseball, but everybody at CBSSports.com. We have some people on there throughout the course of the year, and you guys turn out some a ton of content for people that just can't get enough.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Thanks, you too.
All right. That is Michael Exisa from CBSSports.com. You can go there and click on his name and roll through his articles, including the one on Hunter Dozier and the numbers that kind of show where he's improved. Hard hit balls, crushing the ball in the strike zone, not swinging at as many pitches outside the strike zone. It's good stuff. Like I said, sometimes you don't have an answer. There's not a clear answer as to why. You just, through experience and doing it over and over and over again, you find ways to improve.
Yeah, and I think the selectiveness, and because even in the, you know, in 14 and 15, the Royals did not take many walks.
No,
they
gosh,
were
no.
first-time swingers. Like they did jump on pitches, but they also had some bad pitch selection.
Right.
And it is nice to see Hunter Dozier being more selective. And I think that's something that Mondesi over time is really going to have to improve on.
Mm-hmm.
Of, you know, he had that hot start, but he just had a hot bat, and now you're seeing him starting to chase balls out of the zone more often and not swinging at good pitches. So hopefully he will, you know, improve on that as well, and we'll see more improvement from the whole team in that aspect.
Yeah, it's good to see. Not only was he a first-round pick, he was at a top-10 pick, and he's a super nice kid. I've interviewed him many times, super nice kid. I always root for those guys. I always root for the guys, too, that sustained injuries at the wrong time and just kind of their careers got delayed and they still come back and kill it. So good stuff on Hunter Dozier from Michael Exisa, CBSSports.com. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. Coming up next, we're going to do Bolig Bites. Chris Bolig has selected the best or most interesting or funny or weird sound bites from the week. And
Just whatever
you can find. So we'll do that. The sun is out, and we're enjoying ourselves here on Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Back on Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. That sounds like a little club song, basement of a jazz club.
Another little 90s rap. I always throw it under, you know, as a little bed for when we get after it here with some Bolig Bites. Got to get have a little fun, you know? You gotta have some fun.
So here's what we do. Chris Bohlig, who runs the show here, he'll pick out sound bites every week, and they can be weird, they can be funny, they can be odd. I don't know. They're interesting. I have no idea what they are. Chris is going to play them, and then we'll react to them. So, Chris, without further ado, take it away with Bohlig Bites.
Well, yes, with the, you know, heating up in the NBA, a lot of these sound bites are coming from NBA and whatnot, and we'll start out with Mr. Charles Barkley, the round mound rebound.
Oh, good.
Always has good stuff. And this was him talking about Joel Embiid after I think the crying incident after the game and whatnot, and not being able to take criticism and whatnot. But here's what Charles Barkley had to say about that.
We don't know what we're talking about. Listen, I'm easy to find. I've always said he's a hell of a player. If he can stay healthy, he's going to be one of the greatest ever. If he can stay healthy, the verdict's still out on that. But I get sick of these guys complaining. These young guys, they never call us and say, when I bragged about him and Ben Simmons a few years ago, said they're going to be the future of the NBA, he didn't call me and say, hey, Charles, thanks for the kind words. But listen, I'm going to criticize guys that they deserve it. And listen, they can kiss my ass if they don't like it.
So there is Mr. Charles Barkley talking about young players not being able to take criticism or get really, you know, butthurt about it, whether it be social media or whatnot. I think Embiid went after Charles on social media about something he had said about Embiid or whatnot. That's kind of Embiid's game right now. He's a great player, but he'll go out. If he has something to say, he'll say it on social media or on interviews or whatnot. So it's interesting to see, you know, the dynamics, especially with a guy that we have, you know, kind of we saw the first glimpses of him. If you were in Kansas City, if you watched college basketball, being with Kansas, or if you followed Kansas basketball or whatnot. So I thought it was kind of funny, Charles, because, you know, Charles doesn't hold back, and he doesn't care what anybody thinks.
That is classic Charles Barkley, and that's why that TNT show with Charles and Kenny the Jet and Shaq and Ernie Johnson Jr. as the host, that's why it's the best studio, the best sports studio show on television. And Charles will say anything, and Charles is right. If you're going to come after me when I criticize you, you better compliment me when I say something nice about you. And I like what he said. I ain't hard to find. I'm easy to find. He's a big dude. Give him
a
call.
He's always out there.
Charles has a microphone and unlimited time to talk about you.
Yes.
It's like from The Wire. Don't come at the king and miss.
No.
You best not miss.
Yeah. And we will stick with Charles Barkley again.
Good.
They are in Milwaukee.
Okay.
With the Eastern Conference Finals. And he has not had some great time. Charles Barkley has a little past with Milwaukee, not with the Bucks, but in terms of the city of Milwaukee.
Well, that was the night I got arrested and did my Karate Kid impersonation.
That would be 1991.
1991.
Here on the Ming Streets,
December.
Was it true? Was that the night you actually took your shirt off?
I took all my clothes off because I had these three guys who were trying to beat me up. I wanted them to think I was crazy.
Well,
I did. I started doing hands. I remember the Karate Kid. These three weightlifters up on me.
Yeah.
And I had to take my clothes. I thought they thought I was going to be crazy because it was snowing, too. So I thought they were going to think I was crazy and leave me alone.
Well, maybe you are if you took your clothes off in the snow.
No, Ernie, I was improvised. I'm like the Marines. But this one guy kept standing right in front of me, Ernie.
Yeah.
And I said, wipe on. Wipe off, and two guys backed up. There's one fool standing right there, and I hit his ass as hard as I could. I broke his nose. No shirt, no shoes.
No problem. No service.
That's exactly right.
So that's how they talk to me.
That's what it looked like. They go Lenny and Squeaky, y'all.
Oh, man.
That's exactly what it looked like that night.
Oh, man.
I did go right to jail.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Yes, so Charles Barkley recanting the moment that in Milwaukee on a snowy December night. Wipe on, wipe off. Get out of my way. City of Milwaukee, residents, be ready. Charles Barkley, circa 1991. The picture of him is hilarious in the arrest.
Right.
It shows how short he is without his shoes on. 6'6".
Yeah, he's
I remember a story of him throwing a guy through a window.
Yeah.
Also, there are tons of...
That's where I thought he was going with the story.
No. This is a different story of him being arrested in Milwaukee in his mugshot and whatnot, with him being, you know, there for the Eastern Conference Finals.
I met Charles one time when he was a player. When he was playing with the Houston Rockets, I was down there visiting somebody, and Charles was in the shopping mall. He was like in an electronics store trying to get some new headphones or something, and I saw him. I was like, geez, there's Charles Barkley right there. I think it was the Galleria in Houston. And at that time, shopping malls used to have baseball card stores or sporting card stores. So I ran down to this card store, and I said, do you have a Charles Barkley basketball card? He says, yeah, how much? I said, how much is it? It's like $2 or something, so I bought it. Ran back to the electronics store, and he saw me waiting out front. I was like, oh, God, he's going to get mad. He came out, he signed my card, said, have a nice day, move on. It was a very brief conversation, but I love Chuck. I love Chuck.
Chuck's the man. Chuck's the man. We keep it with, it wasn't on the studio set, but it was, Shaq was at an event, and it was post-draft lottery.
Okay.
And he also had some things to say about some of the draft picks later in this clip.
So happy that the Knicks didn't get the first pick. I'm here the next day. The Knicks fans are so pissed that I'm loving it.
You're loving it?
Yeah.
We're upset, man. We're doing it.
You guys knew you were not going to get the first pick. Cut it out. Now, it creates more stories. If Anthony stays, does Anthony Davis stay? Do they use him to trade to get better pieces to put around Zion? Do they trade the first pick? So now it'll be just speculation and mystery until the draft.
So do the Knicks trade that pick, or do you think they should...
I think if R.J. Barrett's available, they'll probably go for R.J. Barrett. However, the guy everyone should be looking at is Bol Bol. I'm just telling you right now, Bol Bol can play.
He's
a real deal.
So, Shaq thinks Bol Bol.
Really?
Is the guy to look out for. He laughed at the Knicks at their tears, but...
Right, so have I.
Which everyone, I think, has that
Screw
is not
Knicks.
A Knicks fan. Well, I don't... See, the thing is for me, like, I don't really, like, have... The Knicks have never been good in my lifetime. They've always been kind of bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they didn't even win when they had Patrick Ewing.
Right.
So, and they haven't won since, you know, back in the early 70s. So I don't really have a problem with the Knicks. Like, I don't have any, they're not like one of those franchises in New York that has, like, always won and, like, has some, I mean, they you know, Madison Square Garden has that kind of mystical allure to it, like, you know, being the mecca of basketball. But they haven't been good. So it's not like I'm, like, I don't have any, like, if Zion went to New York, like, I would not have a problem with that. I think it'd be really good for the NBA, actually.
Well, their owner's an asshat, so
yes.
they're not going to get any better. But I did like him mentioning Bol Bol because we talked about it yesterday with Jarrett Sutton about the NBA draft, and most draft mock drafts have Bol Bol, who spent a little bit of time at Bishop Miege here in Kansas City. They have him somewhere between 10 and 18, good slot in. But he's Shaq is all about Bol Bol. That's good to hear.
Bol Bol, there we go. We keep it with the NBA. Mr. Caron Butler talking about, we once again, the big thing was this, like, past weekend was the Joel Embiid crying thing. These are his thoughts on that.
Man, I don't think, you know, he should be criticized for crying during a basketball game, man. I think, you know, a lot of people say that guys don't care enough, you know, right, for him to be out there and be emotional in that space. That's the crazy part about the NBA. And that, they say that players need that time to vent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah, it'd be great if, you know, guys was able to go to the locker room, kind of depress.
Yeah.
Kind of let that emotional time die down and then have an opportunity to go back out there and address
right,
the media
right,
and whatever
right,
space.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
he put a lot of emotion into the game.
He did.
So he thinks that they should have time. He defends Joel.
Right.
For crying after the game. And I think he does make kind of a good point, though, about people not, like, the NBA, at least in, when I've been in Kansas City, people that are just strict college basketball fans, they always say, oh, the NBA players, they don't care, which I'm sure there are a lot of them that just are in it for the money. But when you see that type of emotion, like, Embiid, like, I think actually cares about winning, if that makes sense.
Did that interview take place in a bus station?
I think it was at the airport.
Wow.
But
kept hearing the air brakes from a bus in the background.
Yeah, but...
No, for Joel Embiid, I had no problem with it. You care about the game. You're passionate about the game. I don't think many people do have a problem with it. Maybe a couple of people shot off. I don't know. Anti-Sixers fans. I don't care. Just be emotional. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm fine with it, too. Moving a little bit to the MLB, a kind of a forgotten star. A little bit. Sammy Sosa, I kind of mentioned it earlier, talking about when will he go back to Wrigley, and then he talks about a former rival as well.
So the music, of course, 100%. I mean,
yeah,
this is my team all the way. Especially they started not too good, but you know they are bound back. So pretty much, it's a great, you know, I mean, they playing a good baseball right now. I haven't go back to Chicago yet, but I will. Probably 12 years.
For real?
Yes, yes. I definitely, yes. I haven't seen him, but we have something together that we got to meet at some point this year.
Oh, you will?
Yes, yes, yes. And I'm looking for it because, I mean, I remember he was a hitting coach for the San Diego Padres, uh-huh. and I was playing maybe L.A., I think it was, and I think he moved back to San Luis now.
Oh, fantastic! You stay in touch a bit.
Or? I haven't been, I haven't been talked to Marmago in years. Okay. But definitely with we gotta get together at some point, and when we're together, definitely we're gonna talk about it.
So Sammy Sosa has not been back to Wrigley in 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the Cubs kind of want to distance themselves from that whole thing, at least from, you know, this whole steroid era and whatnot. He's also been kind of on hiatus. Like, you kind of disappeared for like 3 or 4 or 5 years. Like, people didn't know what Sammy Sosa was doing.
I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, he's in Miami, I guess.
Well,
he's in Miami, and he, I guess, has an event with Mark McGwire coming up.
Wow.
Which I'm interested to see, like, what that entails, because he said he still talks to, he hasn't talked to him in a while, but they said they're cordial.
Right.
Because they had a pretty, you know, pretty good rivalry in 98.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing that, because at that time I was still a Mark McGwire fan going back to his A's days. And when he was with the Cardinals, I didn't root for him or the Cardinals, but that home run chase.
That was incredible.
It was
TV.
Every night, my best friend and I, at this time we had pagers, right? Every time Mark McGwire would hit a home run or Sammy Sosa would hit a home run, one of us would send a page to the other and tell what the number was, and then at the end, McGwire had 70 and Sosa had 66, and that was just, it was coming out of, you know, a couple of years removed from the work stoppage, and it brought baseball back, and it was just, it was a blast. I know now some people think is meaningless because of steroids, but it was a fun
season. I want to see Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa take a picture together dressed
yes.
as Cowboys.
Oh,
I think that should definitely happen at some point.
Oh, boy.
But, who knows. Moving to the NFL, though, people caught up with Drew Lock.
Oh, yeah.
See what he has to say about his new, I guess, cohort or peer, Joe Flacco.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what he had to say.
I'm super excited.
All right.
No, I don't really have any comments on it. Me and Joe, you know, he's taught me a lot so far. He's dealing with winning football games, and I'm dealing with trying to learn. So.
Got it.
I mean, you know, we're in the same quarterback room every single
day. Yeah, yeah.
Same field. Yeah, he's been great to me.
Does that sound like Joe Flacco has been great to Drew Lock? I think there was some kind of...
No, I'll tell you this. From covering Drew Lock in high school at Lee Summit and
no,
the University
he's
of Missouri,
great with the media and whatnot,
well,
but I think there's an underlying sound in that voice that says, I don't like this guy very much.
I'll give you the other side of it. That may or may not be the case. I don't know. To me, what I heard from Drew Lock there is, I'm not going to be baited into this argument. Because he'll do that. If you ask him a question that's... where you're trying to bait him into something, he doesn't go for it. And to me, that sounded like, okay, you're trying to fuel this fire, that there's something going on between me and Flacco. I'm not giving you anything. That's what I heard.
Yeah, I don't know.
And he's a good kid. I don't think he would want to get into all that stuff.
Yeah, I don't either. I just think Joe Flacco hasn't been, I don't think he's the greatest. Like,
no, he may not be.
So just from what he has said, talked about, like, he doesn't seem like he's too interested in.
No.
I mean, no, nor is it his job. Like, kind of like with Big Ben when they drafted Mason Rudolph and the Steelers did. But we'll see. We also have a former chief in this, Dwayne Bowe.
Okay. I like Dwayne.
Little Dwayne Bowe talking about his newest rap.
Yeah.
He's a rapper.
Yeah.
So
uh-huh.
His newest song. And talks about his toughest defender that he ever went up against.
Okay.
The toughest to ever cover Dwayne Bowe, I would say Champ Bailey when he played at Denver. He actually held me to no catches in one game. I had one catch, but they called pass interference on me. I think they cheated. But that was the only game I never had a catch in, so I would say Champ Bailey.
Wow. That's a good one. Oh, thanks.
So I was playing it, right? I just dropped my Drip on Drip single. I had my album released 2 months ago, album called No Referee. Just the things from, you know, me retiring and, you know, starting my new journey. And it's been good. I mean, everybody's been receptive to the music.
positive vibe. And, you know, this is my first love before I actually played football. A lot of people don't know I actually was recording myself before I ever touched the football. So I'm just going back to my roots now that I'm done. And I'm loving it.
Dwayne Bowe going back to his roots as a rap artist. I wonder if he'll have any success. You know, Tamba Hali.
Yeah, I know.
Tamba Juice is getting back in that. And I think that's a comparable, you know, with Champ Bailey. I think a lot of people in the AFC West would probably say Champ Bailey was their toughest.
Was that recorded did the FBI drop a microphone under a bar somewhere and record some of that?
The audio quality was just for his thing was so bad. It was I tried to amplify. He was like it sounded like he was talking in an echo chamber of some sort.
I like Dwayne Bowe. I think Dwayne.
I think he was a big target. Didn't always get the best separation, but he had horrible
quarterbacks.
Yeah, he had horrible quarterbacks that he was playing with. Until the end when he was with Alex Smith. That was kind of it.
A joke was made of it last week when the Chiefs announced they were giving him the one-day contract because he had retired, 4 or 5 years ago?
Yes.
And so people were joking on Twitter, is he going to thank the Clarks? Because that was one of his famous things where he misspoke calling the Hunts the Clarks. And then I remember I was out there with Corey Smith, our photographer at Metro Sports, and Corey asked him about his offensive coordinator, and he goes, Charlie Rice? Oh, Charlie Rice. I love Charlie Rice. I thought Dwayne was a good dude. He said some outlandish things, but I like Dwayne.
Dwayne's a good guy. And our final bite comes from Mr. Lee Anderson, who is Zion Williams' stepdad. Here's what he had to say after the draft lottery. I think this was on ESPN Louisiana in Baton Rouge.
We're excited. We're excited about that. One thing that Zion has always been taught, you accept the things that you can't change. You change the things that you can change. And this is one of the things that he had nothing to do with. It's the process of the NBA. And certainly, you know, we're excited about the Crescent City down there in New Orleans. And you said about returning to Duke. You know, there's been a lot of speculation, but that is nothing that we have even considered.
So they are not considering going back to Duke, even though on draft lottery night, Zion did not look happy when the New Orleans Pelicans got that. I do think this is a very good message from Zion. You can tell has been raised by very good people with how he's handled all of this stardom. But even though New Orleans is a great city, you can tell that they are still not happy to be going to New Orleans.
Well, the speculation right afterwards, well, he could go back to Duke if he doesn't like him. That's never going to happen.
He's still going to get paid.
He's waiting to get paid $50 million. You think he's going back to school? Do you think he's in class now? No. He was done with class a long time ago, and I'm not saying that in a negative thing. He knows what he's going to do with his life. He ain't going back to Duke. That was never, in my opinion, it was never an option.
No, it was never an option. Yeah. And
what a ridiculous story.
He's going to put on a good face, and he's going to play well for New Orleans. That's his dream, playing the NBA. But not going to New York or L.A., I think that was kind of – when you have those two options there, and then it's Memphis and New Orleans. Not saying New Orleans and Memphis are not that – like New Orleans is a great city. It's fun, but – it's not necessarily a place I would want to live personally.
I can almost guarantee you that speculation started with people who cover the Knicks. I can almost guarantee you because there was no other indication that going back to Duke was a choice. So anyway, all right, Chris, good stuff.
Yep, appreciate it.
Bowlig Bites. We'll take a quick timeout. We'll come back and we'll wrap up hour number three and the show. I got a couple of former high school teachers of mine who are retiring this week, and just want to say something nice about him. So we'll do that. And final thoughts about Game of Thrones before the finale tonight. Back on Sports Radio 810 right after this. Back for the final segment of Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bowlig is running the show. Who is this, Chris? That's another good one.
This is a group called Neon Indian, and the song is called Annie.
All right. Solid way to finish. My name is Brad Porter. That voice you just heard is Chris Bohlig. So a couple of final things to wrap up here. First of all, thank all of our guests today. Matt Verderam, fansided.com, talking Chiefs in the National Football League. We also had Howard Richman on from the Golf Course Superintendents Association, longtime writer for the Kansas City Star before that, talking PGA Championship, and it's Brooks Koepka rolling away right now. And then earlier in the hour, we had Mike Asisa from CBS Sports, Axisa from CBSSports.com, talking Hunter Dozier and the Royals and Major League Baseball. If you missed any of that, you can get the podcast at 810WHB.com. So a couple of things to finish today. My alma mater, Rockhurst High School, is having graduation today down at Municipal Auditorium, which is always a fun event for the kids. And Rockhurst doesn't wear cap and gowns. Rockhurst wears tuxedos, which is it's kind of fun for the kids. So graduation day is today, and I just wanted to publicly thank a couple of teachers who are retiring. And if you went to Rockhurst High School any time in the last, 25 to 30 years, you'll know who I'm talking about. Coach Frank Griffin, who was my freshman football coach, also a fantastic English teacher, taught me a lot of things about how to interpret literature, how to understand it, and how to write about it and improve your writing. Say more by saying less. And Coach Griffin was a big influence on me, and we've kept in touch over the years because my world of sports, I'd go over to Rockhurst to do stories on the football team or whatever, and he was always an assistant football coach and always got a chance to catch up. And he was a great teacher, fantastic teacher, and he's got this New Jersey accent that's never gone away, and it's funny to hear him in class and the way he talks about literature, and he uses this New Jersey affectation to talk about it, and it's great. And my son, who is finishing his freshman year at Rockhurst, got the chance to have him for a teacher this year, so I was very happy that he got to experience that. So Coach Griffin, I always call him Coach Griff, Coach Frank Griffin at Rockhurst High School, enjoy your retirement, and did a great job. Also, Coach Rich Wakera, my freshman biology teacher, he was a longtime wrestling coach, maybe coached a little football too, but he was my freshman biology teacher. He's retiring this week. And Coach Wakera was also another great teacher, a big influence, had a different style of teaching. And I liked it. It made me a better student. And so, Coach Rich Wakera, congratulations on your retirement. Enjoy the next phase, whatever you guys are going to do. Great influences on my life. So, and thankfully, my oldest son got a chance to have them both in class. So there you go.
Teachers are very important and not thanked enough, in my opinion. Not a high-paying profession,
no.
And they do so much to mold young minds and, become huge influence. Like, I still remember a lot of my teachers from high school who, even though sometimes at the time I didn't like doing all the work and putting in the time for it, but, after the fact, I really saw, the help that they actually gave me.
Yep, that's good stuff. Coach Griffin, Coach Wakera, major influences. All right, final couple of minutes of the show. Wrap it up with Game of Thrones. By the way, have you seen Stephen St. John's new picture on his Twitter
new
page?
New profile pic. He changed it every day, I can't keep up.
It's Game of Thrones. I think he's supposed to be Tormund talking with Lady Brienne.
That was a big thing, ever getting together.
Still time. Maybe she could race up north and they could get together again.
No, she'd be racing down south because she's up north right now.
Well, he's even further north, right? Because he said...
Yeah.
Because he said Jon Snow, come to the real north.
Because he's still past the wall.
All right.
Or I guess not the wall anymore.
We got final prediction, or you can go with what you want to see happen at the end. Your choice. Or you can do both. What do you think will happen, or what would you like to happen?
I don't really care, I guess. I'm just happy that the show, I got on board with it when I did.
Yeah.
And because I just started watching it in December, and it has been phenomenal television.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people just need to sit back and stop criticizing and just say, okay, this was actually a great television spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because there's a ton of seasons at the end of it. Like, the last season is never the best season.
Nope.
In my opinion, for any show, even like a Breaking Bad. Or, Sopranos, even the ending for Sopranos and whatnot. There are certain shows where it's been so good throughout that you're never going to get the ending that you want.
Okay, what do you think's going to happen then?
I think I think Jon Snow is going to be on the Iron Throne. But I think Bran might actually there's going to be something interesting with Bran that I don't know what's going to like.
It's going to come out of nowhere.
It's going to come out of nowhere. Yep. So I'm predicting something with Bran important will happen in this thing, but I don't know like what actually is going to happen.
I am predicting that things continue to deteriorate between Jon Snow and Daenerys.
That's a given.
I think Jon Snow goes after her. And not because
I mean, you said yesterday you think Arya is going to kill Daenerys. Well,
yes, I do. And maybe Jon Snow and Arya do it together. And I think Jon Snow is going to be recognized.
Jon Snow's not. He doesn't have the cojones to kill Daenerys. Though.
But I think Jon Snow is going to be recognized as the King of the Seven Kingdoms. But I don't think he's going to take it. I think he's going to give it to Arya because she has the right stuff to get it done, and she'll treat people the right way, unlike what Daenerys has done, especially the last episode.
I think it was when you heard the bells ringing and you didn't, and that was the surrender. That was the surrender.
Right.
That you were supposed to. You were the freer of chains. Like
right.
You were the, you saved all of the slaves. You know,
right.
and you have the. It's just I couldn't. I actually wrapped my head around it because you know she is the. Daughter of the Mad King.
So here's the thing. Don't be surprised if Cersei and Jaime were not killed in the last episode and they make a comeback. Just don't be surprised by that. All right. We're out of time. Thank you to Chris Bolig for putting together the show today. Thanks to Matt Verderam, Howard Richman, and Mike Axisa. My name is Brad Porter. Enjoy your Sunday. Sports Radio at 10 WHB.